Once upon a time, there was a princess who was locked up in a pink castle. She was being held prisoner by a wicked queen. The princess wanted to be like other girls, but the queen wouldn't let her play, or go to school, or even walk. The queen shaved her head and gave her poisons that made her sick, telling her it was medicine. She taught the princess to lie and to do everything she was told from when she was a baby, or she would be punished. The queen would use all these lies about how sick the princess was to take money from the good people of the kingdom. The princess lived like this for many years, but as she grew up, she realized that the queen was indeed wicked and tried to escape. The queen always found her, though, and brought her back to be a prisoner in the castle. The princess all but lost hope, until one day she met a prince. In secret, she told the prince how wicked the queen was and how she couldn't escape her clutches. And in the end, she convinced her prince to do the only thing there was left to do to gain her freedom: kill the queen. You're listening to Deviant, a true crime podcast. I'm Mishka.
And I'm Husband Stoff.
And in this episode, we'll be discussing content that some listeners may find distressing. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
We're back. We committed to recording a second episode.
We did, and we totally didn't build a pillow fort for better sound quality to do it.
I think that my budget mic was a bit too budget, having done many sound tests and mucked around with egg cube foam and all sorts of other things. Yeah. But hopefully it is an improvement on episode one. We're doing our best and we'll keep working on it.
Yeah, and to be fair, the mic on the first one was a phone.
It was my phone.
So, now we've got some proper kit and a blanket fort. We're obviously more prepared.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah.
Hot.
Yeah.
It's hot under here.
I did have a fan, but there was white noise.
So sacrifices we made.
Turn it off. So throughout the episode, you're going to start hearing me go... It's just...
Lovely.
Being dramatic. And
lovely.
Warm and I just can't cope.
You got that out of your system now.
We'll see.
Okay. Well, right. Yes. Episode two.
Episode two.
Having taken some feedback from our first episode there on the serial killer John George Haig, we've decided to have a crack this week at splitting our case into two separate episodes. The reason for this being, we want to try and cover the cases as comprehensively as possible and not sort of gloss over them and just give you a rehash of headlines. So we've decided to try it this week, see what the general feeling is. We've got quite a few followers on Instagram now, which is exciting.
Yeah.
So hopefully that translates to some nice reviews at some point.
And also we're splitting the cases in two episodes as well. It gives more time to focus on the details.
Exactly.
Because I did actually look into it. And arcades from the 1940s were it was like pinball machines and your tin, like Rock and Sock'em Robots and stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
Because they, like, technology wasn't to the point of Pac-Man. It was all literally mechanical arcade machines.
Oh.
Yeah.
Look at you doing further reading. Yeah. I'm so proud.
Check me out.
One of us.
Well, to be fair, it was about games.
Yeah.
It was about arcades. It was a bit different to Mousy Bath Dunks.
And for those of you who have no idea what we're on about, because this is your first episode, if you go back and listen to episode one, we make reference to some old-fashioned entertainment arcades in the 30s and 40s. But that's not what we're talking about this week.
Sure.
I've bought a modding case this week.
Oh.
And I want to give a bit of a disclaimer before I crack into it, really. This is a case that will be familiar to a lot of you, and I know it's very divisive. And from my point of view, I feel that there are lots of victims in this case. Nobody is blameless. And that's something that I want to try and present in our episodes moving forwards, with this particular one. I don't want to take sides any more than I can help it. Obviously, there is a tendency to lean one way, but I don't feel that anybody is perfect at all in this case. And I'm going to try and be as objective as I possibly can. And the case that we are doing part one of this week is the case of Gypsy Rose Blanchard. Blank face.
Yeah.
You don't know this one?
See, when you said about how there was a lot of victims, my first thought was Harvey fucking Weinstein.
Oh, God, don't. I don't think I will ever cover him. He's too disgusting.
No, unless it's with fire ants.
It might become familiar to you as I go on because of a program that I was watching recently called The Act. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, Munchausen's by proxy?
Yes, it's about Munchausen's by proxy.
Oh, okay.
So it's going to get real heavy up in here.
Yeah.
I don't know how much of this is going to be funny. Probably not any of it.
You know me.
Well.
There's no such thing as too soon. We'll see what happens.
Well, this was 2015, this all unfolded. I, for some reason, thought that it was a lot older, and the name Gypsy Rose really stuck out to me. And then I realised why. I wasn't thinking of Gypsy Rose Blanchard. I was thinking of Gypsy Rose Lee. Because occasionally, my mum used to give me the nickname Gypsy Rose Lee as a small child. I had no idea where it came from. So during my research, I did a little Google.
Right.
Gypsy Rose Lee was a very famous burlesque dancer.
Oh, right.
So when I was a toddler and small child, my mum called me Gypsy Rose Lee. She was referring to me affectionately as a stripper. Okay, right, enough waffle. Let's get into the case. This week, we're going to be covering the lead up to the events and what the public eye saw before the murder of Dee Dee Blanchard. And then next week, we'll be going into the darker side of things, the reasoning why, having a look at some of the psychology.
Just to check, when you is Dee Dee as in initials or Dee Dee like Dexter's Laboratory?
Dee Dee like Dexter's Laboratory.
Okay, right.
Do you want me to start the story?
Yes, do it.
Okay, then. Claudine Dee Dee, short for Claudine, Petra, was born in Chack Bay, Louisiana on the 3rd of May, 1967, and grew up in the small bio town of Golden Meadow. She was the youngest of six children, born to parents Claude and Emma, and seemed to have a relationship with her mother that differed from her brothers and sisters. What we're going to do here is we're going to play a game of spot the red flags.
Okay.
Okay. Emma Petra treated Dee Dee as though she was delicate due to a minor infant heart murmur and did not allow her to play outside when young or help her siblings with household chores, as well as having some strange rules around what food Dee Dee ate. Dee Dee's siblings describe Emma as being a helicopter parent to her, spoiling her and going so far as having Dee Dee sleep in her bed well into her childhood. Emma Petra also had a history of petty theft and fraud, even targeting her own family and being convicted multiple times. Dee Dee followed in her mother's footsteps, developing her own criminal record for shoplifting, petty theft and check fraud. Have we learned anything from last week's episode when we hear things like that?
Nothing at all.
Nothing at all.
No.
Seems legit.
Yep.
At the age of 24, Dee Dee met Rod Blanchard at a bowling alley. Rod Blanchard was just 17 years old. He's a child.
Okay.
I mean, okay, if it was the other way around and she was a 17-year-old and he was 24,
yeah,
maybe it would raise less eyebrows because institutional sexism. But he's 17. Whatever way you look at it, he's a child.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dee Dee met Rod Blanchard when he was 17 years old. The two dated for a short period, and after a few months, Dee Dee became pregnant. Rod proposed to Dee Dee, feeling, as he puts it, as a southern boy, it just seemed like the right thing to do, and the two wed. And just to stress to you how young he is, I have a picture from their wedding. which I will put on the Instagram. Are you ready to be slightly worried?
See, Mish is singing because she's trying to find the picture on her phone. This is her stalling.
This is all going to get out. So this is Rod and Dee Dee on their wedding day.
Fucking hell.
I know, look at him. He's so young.
He looks like someone I went to school with.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Somebody I know?
No. Like face in a crowd kind of thing. But like from that kind of age, I mean.
He does. Yeah. He looks like a child, doesn't
yeah.
he?
And she looks...
And slightly terrified, in my opinion. I could be being biased, but... However, Rod was not in love with Dee Dee. He claims that she had some sort of darkness in her, being interested in witchcraft and having a pet tarantula, which I find quite funny, to be honest, because A, they live in Louisiana, which is where New Orleans is.
New Orleans.
So you can't really be funny about witchcraft if you live by New Orleans. But also because we're a pagan household, and I can't think of any two more harmless people than us.
We do, however, have guinea pigs instead of tarantulas.
We do have guinea pigs instead of tarantulas, but we're also a spider-friendly house.
Yeah.
And yet I've never eaten anybody or anything.
No. Oh,
I've never sacrificed any small children or goats.
No, not yet.
It's been slightly judgy, but I suppose it's from a place of ignorance. It's just made me giggle. On his 18th birthday, Rod said he woke up and thought, what am I doing with my life? Realising that he'd married Dee Dee for all the wrong reasons.
What the fuck am I doing?
Pretty much.
What the fuck is this?
Pretty much. I really feel for him. He did genuinely think that he was doing the right thing. And props to him, to be fair.
Did he pop out for some cigarettes?
No. No, he was very honest, actually, and very upfront with her. I really like Rod. I really like him, and you'll see why as we go on. The two divorced while Dee Dee was still pregnant, but Rod vowed to her that he would always be there emotionally and financially for both her and their child, and he very much wanted to have an active relationship with his daughter despite his young age. Dee Dee tried multiple times to have Rod return to their marriage, but he did not, and she went back to living with her family. When the baby was born, she was named Gypsy Rose because Dee Dee liked the name Gypsy and Rose was a big fan of the band Guns N' Roses, which is such a 17-year-old thing.
See, the funny thing is when you first said about Gypsy Rose Lee earlier, my first thought was like 70s, like Woodstock metal. Rock and roll kind of thing.
Yeah, I kind of suspect that maybe Dee Dee was a fan of Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Because they've got that song Gypsy. It's one of my favourite songs. I can't hum it because we'll get sued. Members of the Petra family said that Gypsy may have been slightly premature when she was born, but was other than that a perfectly healthy newborn baby. However, at the age of 3 months, Dee Dee raised concerns that her daughter had sleep apnea. So sleep apnea is a condition where basically you just stop breathing at night.
Yeah.
You just stop. My dad's got it. It can happen up to 30 times an hour. It's different from snoring. The two often come hand in hand. But what happens with sleep apnea is that your airway basically goes and suckers closed. And you can tell if someone's apneic because they'll go very quiet for a minute. And then a few seconds later, they'll go as the airway reopens again. Yeah, it's a really distinctive sound and it's quite frightening. And yeah, that can happen up to 30 times an hour for somebody who has severe sleep apnea. It can be worsened by factors such as obesity and by sleeping on your back, because obviously that puts extra pressure on the respiratory system. It's also fairly common, though, in infants, and there may be links with it and sudden infant death syndrome, SIDS, which is cot death.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite frightening if you think that your baby has that. I'd be frightened. So Dee Dee had taken some college towards a nursing degree, although she'd not completed the education. She'd also worked as a nurse's aide, which is a healthcare assistant here in the UK. We've known people that have been HCAs. Therefore, she had some experience with the medical system, so her suspicions were treated as valid by doctors, even when after 3 sleep studies on the baby, they'd not observed any apneic episodes. Dee Dee was given a CPAP machine for Gypsy, which is a machine where a mask or tube is worn by the user over the nose at night, and it pumps air through the mask at
a reasonably high pressure that basically forces the airway open and ensures steady respiration. And again, my dad's got one. He absolutely loves it because he said he gets a much better quality of sleep. But if you sort of, if you have to wear one of those, particularly as a baby when you've got delicate skin, there can be some side effects. So that can include things like, obviously, irritation from the mask around the face. It can cause congestion because there's lots of cold air rushing through your nasal passages. And it can also cause bloating of the stomach, because if the mask isn't fitted properly, you can end up swallowing air. So it's not something that you want to wear if you don't have to.
Just make you belch from fart noise.
Yeah, and it can give you tummy ache and all sorts. It's really nasty. Oh,
if your stomach's filling up like a balloon, I'm not surprised it gives you stomach ache.
Stuff like that. This is all these side effects of these treatments are things to bear in mind when we look at Gypsy's case. Gypsy would have to wear this CPAP device every night from the age of 3 months onwards. This would be the first of many afflictions that poor Gypsy was struck by in the following years. Like her mother, she had a heart murmur. At age 5, she was afflicted with childhood leukemia. And Dee Dee explained to Rod that their child had an unspecified chromosomal disorder which affected her development and caused global delay.
Who said that?
Her mum. She told her dad that.
Right.
So a chromosomal disorder, you've got chromosomes in your body that store all your genetic instructions for how your body is formed.
Yes, your blueprints.
Yeah. And you've got... I get this wrong now, I'm going to be really embarrassed. I believe that human beings have 46 pairs of chromosomes that map up how our entire body works.
Mm-hmm.
A chromosomal disorder is a still fairly misunderstood area of medicine because it's so complicated. But it's either you don't have enough chromosomes, you have some extra chromosomes, or one of your chromosomes is damaged. There's lots of different types of chromosomal disorder. And if any of these things happen, it can affect you both physically and mentally. So the most commonly known chromosomal disorder is Down syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
But there are lots of others out there. It's not a very well understood area of medicine because it is so complicated. So Dee Dee told Rod that Gypsy had something wrong with her chromosomes. They didn't know what, but it was causing all sorts of issues with her health and her development. She also told Rod that because of that, Gypsy's mental and emotional development lingered at around the maturity of a 7-year-old, even when she entered her teens. She said that she wouldn't get beyond that point. Gypsy's chromosome defect resulted in issues in her hearing and her sight.
So it was actually a real thing? Okay.
Wait and see.
So I can see that she's already in Munchausen land.
Munchausen's horrible. It really is. There are no winners in this situation.
It sounds, just from what you said so far, that she was a narcissist and she needed the attention, but without the husband leaving, because it's just the boy, she needed a new outlet and went mental.
Well, this is something that we're going to go into in more detail in the second episode.
Okay.
But yes... Munchausen's is a syndrome. It's a behavioural disorder. So it's technically a mental illness, but not in that you've got a hormonal imbalance or anything like that. It's a behavioural issue. So you've got Munchausen's, which is where you feign illness or injury to get attention. You've got Munchausen's by proxy, which is where you cause illness or injury to another person. It's usually a mother to their child in order to garner sympathy and attention. Then you've also got a slightly different condition called malingering. And the difference between malingering and Munchausen's is that Munchausen's is all about the attention. Malingering is about getting financial and material benefit as a result of faking these illnesses. Okay. And there can be crossover. And that's what we're going to see in Dee Dee's case.
Okay.
But we'll get into the full ins and outs of that in the next episode, because that's a very big can of worms to open.
Okay.
Gypsy's chromosome defect resulted in issues in her hearing and sight. She suffered from seizures, specifically grand mal seizures, given the medication that she was prescribed. So grand mal seizures are the big floppy doppy ones that you kind of stereotype when you think of epilepsy.
Yeah.
It's not absent seizures. Around 5 or 6, she was suffering with such severe reflux that she had a wrap surgery where part of the stomach lining is wrapped around the opening of the esophagus to tighten the stomach opening and prevent acid from escaping. It's a very invasive surgery.
Oh.
She also had a feeding tube fitted through her abdominal wall and began to subsist almost entirely on the pediatric meal replacement Pediasure, so milkshakes, nutritional milkshakes. These would be administered through the tube along with her medication. She didn't really eat anymore. Her breathing difficulties did not end with her sleep apnea, and she developed hypoventilation, which is a lack of oxygen saturation in the blood. And that meant that she often required oxygen therapy. So you see quite a few pictures of her where she's got a nasal cannula on. She had to manage asthma, anemia, and a wide array of severe allergies. Then, at 7 years old, after a minor motorcycle accident while riding pillion with her grandfather, Gypsy fell off the bike and incurred a knee injury that would not heal, according to her mother. In the end, Dee Dee revealed that she had muscular dystrophy, leading to her developing paralysis from the waist down and also incontinence. Muscular dystrophy is the umbrella term for a number of conditions within this diagnostic criteria, but they all share similar symptoms of muscle wastage and loss of muscular control. They are degenerative diseases and can ultimately affect both the muscles of the heart and the muscles used for breathing, which can lead to fatality.
And that is what Cartman said his mum had in South Park.
It is. Also what Dee Dee said Gypsy Rose had. But the really frightening thing about this as well, apart from the paralysis, is there is no cure for muscular dystrophy. So she'd signed her child's death warrant by obtaining this diagnosis. You
quote,
can't
unquote.
See my air quotes going on here. So from the age of 7 years old, Gypsy was then confined to a wheelchair. Gypsy was devastatingly ill, but Dee Dee, it seemed, was an angel sent from heaven to care for her daughter. Despite dealing with the horrific overhanging knowledge that she'd shared with Rod that Gypsy would not live to adulthood, so she told her dad that Gypsy would not live to see 18.
Poor lad.
Yep. Dee Dee made it her mission to ensure that her daughter had the best possible medical care and the fullest life possible. Dee Dee would take Gypsy to a wide array of doctors and specialist children's hospitals, seeking clinical and surgical interventions on behalf of her sickly daughter. Gypsy had tubes surgically fitted in her ears in a bid to prevent her frequent ear infections. This one I find really hard, the next one, because this is something that I've actually had done, and I wouldn't wish it on anybody. She had the muscles of her eyes operated on multiple times in a bid to improve her vision. Yeah, just to let you know, guys, I have a congenital defect where I'm blind in my right eye, and I've had a lot of exploratory surgery at a very young age, and I would not wish that on anybody. It's, apart from anything else, it's bloody frightening. She had a muscle biopsy surgery as well, where doctors were trying to diagnose her muscular dystrophy. So this involves opening up the muscle and cutting out a piece of the muscle fibres in order to take it away for testing.
So they can have a good old look at it and go, oh.
She was 7.
What? She's 7 at this point?
She's 7 when they did this to her. Gypsy had issues with chronic drooling known as hypersalivation. So in a bid to treat this, doctors first of all injected her salivary glands with Botox in a bid to improve her symptoms. When that didn't work, they ultimately removed some of her salivary glands through surgery. This is a treatment that is usually reserved for the removal of salivary gland cancer. It's a very extreme treatment.
Fucking hell.
This is why I wanted to split this into two episodes.
Yeah.
I felt it's really important to have a proper look at what was done to her.
Just a bit.
Gypsy's teeth also crumbled painfully, likely due to the medications that she was taking and her compromised nutritional status by being so reliant on Pediasure, and her teeth ultimately had to be extracted. I was able to find some of the medications that Gypsy was on. It's really hard to find her medical records, I think because they're in the process of trying to sue some of the doctors, so they haven't been used to the public. But I did manage to find through watching a couple of documentaries, one obviously very well known, Mummy Dead and Dearest, and the other one, Gypsy's Revenge. And during Gypsy's Revenge, we get a few flickers of her medical records, including the medication. So I wanted to go through some of these medications that I managed to catch to try and help you understand what they were doing to her. She was on Xanax. This is a type of tranquilizer used to treat anxiety disorders. Common side effects of Xanax include ataxia, that's a lack of muscle control or coordination, and it causes involuntary movements such as spasms and twitching. It makes it difficult to walk or pick up objects. Cognitive dysfunction, constipation, difficulty urinating, drowsiness, dysarthria, which is a difficulty speaking, so slurring words and things like that, fatigue, memory impairment, skin rash, weight fluctuation, anxiety, blurred vision, diarrhea, insomnia, decreased libido, and appetite fluctuation. That's all side effects of one medication.
From Xanax. Which is widely used across the US, though.
Yeah, because it's very effective in treating anxiety disorders. But with, like with any medication, there is the risk of side effects. And Xanax is a big gun. Big gun.
I remember saying about sort of some documentary on TV that some doctors basically use Xanax as a cure-all, and it has a nickname, like the...
Zombie drug?
No, it was some amalgamation of words, like the skinny, sexy, happy, moody pill.
There's probably listeners screaming right now.
I don't know what this is. Put it in the Instagram or Twitter.
Or Facebook group. I've made a Facebook group.
Oh, yeah.
Details at the end, guys.
Yeah, I deleted mine, like, let's see. Fucking years ago.
I rejoined Facebook just for this podcast.
Done it just for you, listeners.
Just for you. So the next medication that I could find she was taking was niacin, which is an antifungal medication for the treatment of conditions such as oral thrush or candiditis. Common side effects can include mouth irritation, diarrhea, nausea, vomiting, stomach upset, rash, hives, skin irritation, allergic reaction, a slowed heart rate, bronchospasm, facial swelling, and muscle pain.
Bronchospasm?
Bronchospasm. It's basically the muscles in your chest, so around your lungs. The muscles that you'll use for breathing.
Oh.
Spasming.
I do that sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Breathing.
EpiPen injections, which are a treatment for severe allergic reactions. The active ingredient of these is epinephrine, also known as adrenaline. Potential side effects include an increase in heart rate, an irregular heartbeat, sweating, nausea and vomiting, difficulty breathing, paleness, dizziness, weakness, headache, apprehension and anxiety. I've got to try and say this next one. Levetiracetam solution. This is an anticonvulsant.
And not a made-up word.
Not a made-up word. I've probably said it wrong. Common side effects are neurosis, drowsiness, asthenia, which is physical weakness, headache, swollen nasal and throat passages, nervousness, abnormal behaviour, aggressive behaviour, agitation, anxiety, apathy, depersonalisation, depression, fatigue, hostility, hyperkinetic muscle activity, mental disorders, outbursts of angers, personality disorder, irritability and mood changes. That one in particular caught my eye. And she was also on Flovent, which is a corticosteroid used for treating breathing disorders. Common side effects, cold symptoms such as a stuffy nose, sneezing, sore throat, sinus pain, low fever, cough, wheezing, tightness in the chest, hoarseness, white patches and sores inside the mouth and lips, headache, nausea, vomiting, upset stomach. Now, just going back as well to the anticonvulsant drug. I have been on an anticonvulsant drug. I don't think it's in the same family as this one, but I was prescribed gabapentin because of a chronic pain condition that I have. It's an anticonvulsant, but it also has other benefits, like it can block the signals in the nerve to the brain that translate pain. Do you remember what I was like when I was on gabapentin?
You've been on a whole cocktail of different stuff, haven't you?
Gabapentin was the one where I slept for 48 hours straight.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Fucking hell.
And it was so severe in terms of side effects that I refused to take it when I next saw the consultant. Because it completely... I lost days at a time on this anticonvulsant medication. And I needed it.
Quote-unquote. Quotation marks.
because of the pain condition that I have, and I refused to take it. Mm. The side effects were so severe, and that was just one medication.
So the thing is, with side effects, mm-hmm. just because the list doesn't mean you'll get them. I mean, I've taken stuff that like should have made my fucking limbs fall off,
yeah.
and, like growing rashes and stuff, but not had them. But if she's taking all these at once, mm-hmm. and this is just the ones that are known at the moment,
this is the ones we know of, yeah.
Then what was the starting point? Because
the starting point was the sleep apnea with the breathing machine.
But how do you go from sleep apnea to all this other bollocks? Who
I'll show you.
Who did she blow to get these?
I'll show you a picture of her medicine cabinet later.
I'll
show you a picture.
A toy chest.
And the reason that I'm bringing up these side effects as well...
Is this medicine cabinet going to look like my case of Warhammer paints?
It's worse.
Christ almighty.
The reason I'm bringing up these side effects is obviously... Like you say, you may not get them, but at the same time, if you do get them, they can imitate the symptoms of a lot of illnesses.
Yeah. So it's things will have doubled up. So this side effects looks like this. So that means you've got this.
Precisely.
Because you were saying about one that, like, this, there was a speech slurring one, mm-hmm. and then, like, the muscle relaxing stuff. Mm-hmm. Those two combined can mount the dribble.
Mm-hmm.
So
exactly,
let's rip out your fucking saliva glands.
Mm-hmm. It's awful.
There's a lot of malpractice going on in this story, huh?
It gets worse. All I can say is that Gypsy was failed so many times.
Just a bit, yeah.
So many times. You're going to get really angry before the end of this case, I think.
Oh, goody.
Dee Dee took Gypsy's ill health in her stride, though. She pulled her out of school during the second grade. I think she would have been about 7 years old at that point, so it probably coincided with when she ended up in the wheelchair, and brought her home to homeschool her so that she could be cared for full-time. Dee Dee understood medical terminology with ease because of her education and her healthcare assistant background. She retained information...
Well, partial education. Mm. She didn't finish it.
She knows enough.
Yeah.
She retained medical information with ease in a way that surprised doctors and kept meticulous binders of her daughter's medical records, but she did have some issues of her own. Dee Dee became the sole caregiver for her mother Emma towards the end of her life. Emma's cause of death has never been confirmed, but the rest of the family was very concerned about the state of her hygiene and her food intake towards the end. Perhaps Dee Dee was just overwhelmed between her mother and a very sick child. Perhaps sometimes she forgot to feed her or change her soiled bedding. But perhaps she just didn't hear Emma's cries for help sometimes as they rang through the family home. The family believes that she starved her out.
Yeah, she ignored her because she wasn't giving her the attention she wanted.
Well, no.
No, as in, like, with Gypsy, she can go, look at my poor sick child, whereas her mother... wasting away, who's going to say anything if she helps her or not?
The thing about Munchausen's is that it's keeping people sick. So by not feeding her mother and by not changing her when she sorted herself and things like that, she kept her sick so that she could be her nurse, because that's where she gets the gratification from. It's never been confirmed, but her family thinks that she offed her mother like this. Once Emma passed away, Claude remarried to a woman named Laura. And strangely, she too began to suffer with an unknown ailment while Dee Dee was living with them. It went on for 9 months and had symptoms of pain and nausea that seemed to spike in severity when Dee Dee cooked. Dee Dee would cook for the family a lot. Fortunately, these symptoms miraculously seemed to resolve once Dee Dee had left the house and Laura would make a full recovery. She got very lucky. Again, they can't prove anything, but they're convinced that what Dee Dee was doing was putting Roundup weed killer in Laura's food.
Yeah, I was going to say, no one found the bloody delivery note for rat poison.
No, they think she was putting weed killer in her food. Again, because then she could care for them.
Mm.
Look like an attentive daughter. All of this is speculation, guys. All of this is speculation. Warrants for Dee Dee's arrest also began to pop up again for writing bad checks and credit card fraud, where she'd take out cards in her family members' names and rack up thousands of dollars of debt. So we're seeing a repeat behaviour here. In 2001, perhaps to avoid conviction, or perhaps for some other reason, hint, hint, Dee Dee up sticks and moved herself and Gypsy out of the Peach family home several hours away to Slidell in Louisiana. It's about 40 minutes outside of New Orleans. In Slidell, the pair lived in public housing and had their utilities and expenses supported by public funding, as well as regular child support payments from Rod of $1,200 a month, which I think must have been pretty much his full wage packet. That's very little difference between that and what I earn on a monthly basis.
Well, just from what we know about this fella, he's a good lad. He married her because he thought it was the right thing to do. And when he came to terms with, what the fuck am I doing? He was upfront about it, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And went his own way and continued to support.
Rod is my favourite person out of this entire situation. And we will look at him in a bit more detail in the next episode when we go into the psychology of this as well.
Right.
Through Rod's payments, Dee Dee didn't have to work and therefore could continue Gypsy's care and treatments at both Tulane Medical Center and the Children's Hospital of New Orleans. So, yeah, he was funding her lifestyle to make sure that they didn't want for anything, essentially. Sadly, tragedy continued to follow the tiny family of mother and daughter, and in 2005, Hurricane Katrina struck, which decimated their home. Like so many others, the pair lost everything, and Gypsy's medical records were actually washed away in the storm as well, so they were left with nothing at all. They ended up moving to a relief shelter for disabled children in Covington, Louisiana, with photographs of their ruined home. And there the staff were charmed by the pair and fell completely in love with the tiny, ever-cheerful Gypsy. Her resilience in her condition and her mother's devotion would break hearts for the displaced pair. One of the doctors at the shelter there, Janet Jordan, was particularly taken with the sweet little girl and suggested that the pair move to her own native Missouri. She basically said that she'd had a really happy childhood there. It was a lovely, safe, quiet place, and they'd probably do well moving there, obviously, because they'd lost everything in Louisiana. So it was the perfect place for them to have a fresh start. The pair's tragic circumstances also attracted the attention of the local news media as well as charitable organisations. And their combined attentions and efforts resulted in Dee Dee and Gypsy being airlifted to Aurora, Missouri, as Janet had suggested, in September 2005. In Aurora, they were provided with a house there completely rent-free. The community pitched in to help them move, and there's actually news footage of local nurses, emergency workers, and police officers all pitching in off their shifts to come and help move donated furniture into the house for Dee Dee and Gypsy before handing over the keys. But Missouri's caring and generosity didn't stop there. Everybody wanted the best for Gypsy and her mum. In 2008, the generosity overflowed into Habitat for Humanity building them a very special bungalow on West Volunteer Way, Springfield, Missouri. This is a neighbourhood of houses that's just all built by Habitat for Humanity, and so they're all for families in need, and they've created a whole community out there. It's amazing. The bungalow was painted princess pink and was designed especially to accommodate Gypsy's needs. There was a ramp to easily allow access for her wheelchair, wind-down doorways and lowered light switches so that Gypsy could get around independently. There was also an extra wide jet bathtub to soothe her sore muscles. She was particularly excited about that. She loved telling the news reporters all about it. Gypsy's bedroom was also a fantasy in candy colours. It was painted to be a princess tower with fantastical windows looking out to imaginary scenes from a fairy tale. There was a four-poster bed covered in climbing silk flowers, and a portrait of Gypsy herself as the titular princess, complete with crown and flowing blonde hair. Because one of the things you'll see from Gypsy's various news appearances and photographs is that she had a completely shaved head.
Yeah, I've seen those pictures.
Yeah, it's pretty iconic. In Gypsy's own words, when interviewed by a local television station on their new home, dreams really do come true. In Missouri, Dee Dee and Gypsy became local celebrities. The surrounding community and charities wanted to do all they could to enrich Gypsy's life. They were provided with free flights to and from Gypsy's hospital visits so she could continue to see the best possible doctors. They were hosted in Ronald McDonald houses and cancer charity lodges when they travelled, so they didn't have to worry about hotel costs.
I raised money for them once. Well, by proxy.
What, Ronald McDonald?
Yeah. When I was working there, they you know, you get like a charity key rings. It's like £1 and all the proceeds go towards the charity.
Yeah.
this is going back fucking years, because I'm 33, I don't work at McDonald's nowadays, obviously. And the thing was, they had a big old box of these keyrings and sell them as part of the order or go towards charity.
Yeah.
And the record that had been set for the, by the person on the shift before me was 10.
Ooh.
And during the case, during the afternoon, I sold every single one they had.
Well.
Yeah. Every single order. I just done my little pitch. It's like, also we did a little bit of fundraiser for a McDonald's charity. You get this little key ring, only £1. Yeah, sure, go for it. Pretty much every single order. And it was a busy-ass drive-through, so I sold every single bloody one they had. And they were like, all right, cool. The record's yours.
Do you want me to ruin that for you now?
Go on.
You might have heard pay for Dee Dee's room.
Ah, shit.
I'm sorry. I'm sure you didn't. I'm sure it went to one of the ones in the UK. Like, there's a Ronald McDonald House by Brighton Hospital.
There is, yeah.
I'm sure it went to one of the ones in the UK. I'm sure she didn't get her grubby mitts on your money. Charities such as the Make-A-Wish Foundation provided Gypsy and Dee Dee with trips to Disneyland, sci-fi conventions with celebrity meetups, including Elijah Wood, which I was very miffed about, and even backstage passes to meet Miranda Lambert at her concerts. There was also regular crowdfunding efforts to pay for Gypsy's surgeries and treatments. Everybody wanted to ensure that Gypsy wanted for nothing and that her mother was rewarded for her devoted care to her daughter.
Who's Miranda Lambert?
She's a country singer, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Yeah.
I know. America.
Miranda Lambert. I don't know who that is, listeners.
I think she's a country singer. She's some sort of pop star over there.
Okay.
I don't know. I spend my life swinging between Brian Eno and Evanescence.
Yeah.
I don't have a normal music taste.
I don't know who's music around here nowadays.
In the new community, Dee Dee formed friendships with those around her. And gradually, she began to divulge details to these friends of how Gypsy's father was an abusive alcoholic and drug addict. Who didn't send them any money. And that was why it was just her and Gypsy against the world. Gypsy herself also managed to make a friend with a local young woman, Aaliyah Woodmansey, and the pair began to see one another in a big sister, little sister relationship. To everyone on the outside, it seemed that Dee Dee and Gypsy had finally found their perfect, happy life in Springfield, surrounded by lots of people who cared about them deeply. Which is why, on June 14th, 2015, at 3:42 p.m, a post made on Dee Dee and Gypsy's shared Facebook account caused an immediate rush of concern in their extended community. The post was only 4 words. That bitch is dead.
That bitch, Carol Baskin.
Different bitch.
Okay.
At first, people thought that perhaps the pair were fooling around, reacting to a movie that they were watching, or even that their Facebook account might have been hacked. But 8 minutes later, a second, much more graphic post was made by D. Jip Blanchard. I fucking slashed that fat big and raped her sweet, innocent daughter. Her scream was so fucking loud. Lol. These posts are still up. They're still up on Facebook. Dee Dee's Facebook page, or Dee Dee and Gypsy's Facebook page, but Dee Dee's Facebook page, has been memorialised. And I can only find one of them. I think they've now deleted the second one, but the first one is still up.
Okay.
I'll put these on the Instagram for those that really feel the need to have a look. This was not a normal Facebook hack. A string of comments followed between worried friends and neighbours, everyone panicked by what might be happening to the vulnerable pair in the pink bungalow. Police were called, and those that were nearby all hurried to the Blanchard's home, trying to find out what was happening. Dee Dee's Nissan Cube, gifted to the pair just a few weeks before, was parked on the driveway. The windows of the house were blotted out by privacy film, and knocking on the doors raised no response. When the police arrived, they explained to worried bystanders that they couldn't actually enter the premises currently without a warrant because there wasn't enough probable cause. But they didn't stop a worried neighbour, Dave Blanchard, who was no relation to Dee Dee. I think it's a bit like Smith in the area. They've all got the same fucking name. They didn't stop him from basically searching around the house until he found an open window and they let him slip inside.
Just saying, I would have literally smashed the door down straight away.
I have to say, though, like, talk about potentially compromising an investigation. Like, he could have trodden all over evidence and God knows what else.
Yeah.
I can understand why they did it, but at the same time, Like, I think they probably had enough fucking probable cause to just bash the door down.
Yeah. Even if it was, there is the risk of contaminating the crime scene, if that happened, like, round here.
Well, the thing is, if the police had done it, at least they'd have, like, their fingerprints and stuff. But they just sent this guy in.
Yeah. No, I get that. But they're saying, if I was in this situation, if I was a neighbour and I saw that, I'd be smashing my way into there so I can get my hands on the fucker.
That's because you're very gallant.
And also, it's a good excuse to, like, you know, be a topic on a podcast like this.
I remember when there was a creep on the bus behind me once when I was coming home from work. And for 35 minutes, he'd been doing things like sniffing my hair and touching me and asking where I lived. And when I got off the bus and knocked frantically on the front door to tell you what was happening, you ran out of the house with your completely blunt, display only nerd boy, everyone had one at 14 years old, katana, no, and chased the bus down the road.
Correction, Sting.
Sting. It was my Sting, was it? Sting. I thought it was your katana.
It's the first one I could get.
And chased the bus down the road with me screaming after you. You will be the one that's arrested, not him.
It'll be worth it.
You're very gallant and a little bit silly.
Well, it's not my fault.
I know. You're very heroic.
Yeah. Like I said, I'll be a topic on one of these podcasts one day.
When Dave got into the bungalow, it was freezing cold. The air conditioning had been cranked up to maximum. There were no immediate signs of a struggle or any sort of home invasion, though. There was also no sign of Dee Dee or Gypsy, but all three of Gypsy's wheelchairs were still in the house, meaning that the extremely vulnerable girl was now not able to move on her own wherever she was. Dave left the house not knowing what else he could do. There seemed to be no obvious clues. This, I'm really pissed off about this next bit. Although I don't think it would have made any difference, but still. The search warrant didn't come through until 7 hours later at 10:45 p.m., which I think is shocking. Like, how long does it take a judge to sign off a bit of paper?
But can't you get entry if you have probable reason?
Yeah, but they said that they didn't have enough probable cause. And I suppose when he came out, he hadn't seen anything to warrant them breaking in. But 7 hours to get a search warrant. Like, the whole third point of when people go missing, it's the first 24 hours are the most important. And they left 7 waiting around for a bit of paper.
See, watching Luke Cage, for a lot of it, he's working alongside this cop girl. And there's, like, this warehouse where there's this dodgy shit going on. And she's at the door. And she goes, oh, it's my cannabis. And then Luke punched the door down.
Like, I heard a shot.
Yeah.
Honestly, he was going to stop them at this point.
I've seen it plenty of times on, like, other TV shows and stuff. And be like, oh, I heard a gun. Do you hear a gun? Yep, I heard a gun. Let's go in.
Yeah, unfortunately, it didn't make any difference in this case. The warrant didn't come through until 10:45 at night. And outside, an ever-increasing group of frightened neighbours and gathering press waited for news as the house was finally officially searched. When the officers emerged, it was the worst possible news. Dee Dee had, in fact, been in the house, though she'd been difficult to see among the mess of blankets and coverlets that she was covered by. She was face down in her bed, and from the state of decomposition, it was clear that she had been dead for several days. Dee Dee had been stabbed a total of 17 times in a frenzied attack. Police began processing the scene and did a rape kit before starting to collect evidence from around the house. And they found a large closet of medication for Gypsy. I did a quick cursory count. It's quite hard to see on the photograph. I'm going to put it up on the Instagram. I think there were between 150 and 200 containers of different medications in the closet.
Fucking hell.
Mm-hmm.
How do you take all those? From the blender?
They also recovered the following. A cigarette butt, a piece of gum, a bottle cap, which I'm guessing they took all for DNA, 4 spray bottles, numerous blood swabs, a credit card, an electric benefit transfer card in Dee Dee's name, Dee Dee's driver's license.
They found blood swabs?
They were taking swabs of blood. There's blood everywhere. Okay. It's not hard to find the crime scene photos. I'm not going to be posting them. If you want to find them, just put them into Google. It's just not something that I'm personally willing to share. I think that crosses the line.
And also, you kind of might get your Instagram digging down.
Well, it's not so much that, you know, Dee Dee, whatever we think of her, was murdered and this is her body. And it's a case of preserving, at the very least, some basic dignity.
Mm. even though she couldn't afford it to her own daughter.
Mm. They also recovered bloody sheets and comforters and pillows from the bed, a safe which had been opened and gone through, baby wipes, some of which were used and bloodied, a Barney stuffed animal, a phone, a nightgown, a roll of paper towels, the Nissan Cube vehicle, cups, receipts, two wallets belonging to Dee Dee, numerous wigs, clothing, a water bottle, cleaning products, photo albums, miscellaneous records, which I can only assume were Gypsy's quote-unquote medical records, newspaper articles, a bus pass for Gypsy, numerous kitchen knives, three small swords, and several medical books. People get really up in arms about the whole little swords thing. But Gypsy went to sci-fi conventions with her mum. She was a cosplayer.
Yeah.
We have swords in our house because we're a nerdy household. So people get really freaked out about the swords. But for us, like, as a nerdy house who do things like cosplay, and we've got weapons all over the place. They're harmless, but we've got them everywhere.
And most importantly, your brother gave me a sword on our wedding day.
Yes, my brother gifted my husband with a broadsword as his wedding present. My brother won the wedding.
Yeah. And I wore it with my kilt.
You did.
At the wedding.
You did, and it lived on our altar until we packed up because we're looking to move house.
We've had to set up a proper recording room.
Yes, we will, with real soundproofing on the walls and everything. A couple of months, guys.
Although I'm sure we can still find time to make a blanket fort.
Yeah, it's going to get easier as the weather gets colder.
Yeah.
Quite warm under here at the moment.
Yep.
Even more troubling than Dee Dee's body alone, there was also still no sign of where Gypsy was in the house. Dave's wife, so the man that broke into the house to have a look, Kim, organised a GoFundMe page to raise money for Dee Dee's funeral expenses because it was the two of them alone. And she also probably figured that that money was going to go towards Gypsy's funeral as well. It seemed really unlikely now that she was going to be found alive. Her mother had been murdered and Gypsy was in constant need of medical care and tube feeding. So wherever she was, there wasn't very much hope for her. Kim also organised a candlelit vigil, though. She wanted to focus the community's prayers, even in their grief for their friends, and try and hold everyone together until Gypsy was found, no matter what condition she was in. Images of weeping friends to the Blanchard family filled news reports. Volunteer Way was rocked to its core. All everyone kept saying was, how could anyone do something so evil to such a sweet, helpless pair? Aaliyah Woodmansey, Gypsy's friend, watched this all unfold with her insides twisting in knots. She knew something. Something that the girl that she saw as a little sister had trusted her alone to know. Gypsy had an online boyfriend. He was 26 years old. Dee Dee had repeatedly told anyone that would listen that her daughter had the mental age of 7, and Aaliyah actually thought that Gypsy was only 15. So she was worried that the boyfriend might be a predator targeting a vulnerable girl. But Aaliyah hadn't told anyone because she didn't want to break Gypsy's confidence. And also the boyfriend was in a whole other state. Gypsy had told her that he lived in Wisconsin. So she couldn't see how he would be that much of a threat. Now, though, Aaliyah realised that this knowledge took on new severity. And she approached the police to tell them everything that she knew about the clandestine love affair. She even knew the boyfriend's name, Nicholas Goedejohn. Police took the information gratefully. Officers also ran a trace on the IP address where the incriminating Facebook posts had come from. It was registered in Big Bend, Wisconsin, to one Nicholas Goedejohn. Police ran checks on Goedejohn now as their prime suspect for Dee Dee's murder and found that he had a previous criminal record. You'll like this. For sitting in a McDonald's for 9 hours watching pornography and masturbating.
So was this like in the restaurant?
Yeah.
Yeah,
he sat there with a laptop tugging it off for 9 hours straight. You'd get blisters, wouldn't you?
Yeah. And I think if it takes you 9 hours to get anywhere, you've got different problems you need to address in there.
Yeah, we'll go into that more in the next episode. He certainly had problems.
Oh, Christ.
Oh, God. 9 hours. Eventually, he just ran out of cum. It'd be like a puff of dust out at the end, wouldn't it? Little flag just going bang.
9 fucking hours.
Oh dear, I know he'd enjoy that.
Did he just sit the whole time, or did he like go up and get drinks? I'm getting thirsty. I need to refuel.
What I don't understand is why it took them 9 hours to call the police if he was just sat there jacking it.
Yeah.
Like why would you wait that long, really?
And none of the staff like just dragged him out.
No.
Because it's
quite a good thing that they didn't, though, because when the police found him, he also had a massive knife on him.
Because I've literally physically thrown someone out of McDonald's before.
Yeah, but you're huge.
Yeah.
You're enormous. It hurts my neck to look up at you. Stoff is 6'4" and built like a brick shit house.
Hello.
And I'm 5'2" on a tall day.
5'2" is a bit generous.
I'm 5'2" in bare feet.
4'1".
Shut up. No, I'm 5'2". That too is very important as well. Okay. But yeah, you are fucking huge.
Yeah. And you're,
like most of the people that work in McDonald's are probably quite young kids. It's a lot. It's really kind of a typical first job, isn't it?
Yeah. And I was pretty tall, pretty young as well.
So yeah, 9 hours jacking it with a knife in his pocket in a McDonald's.
It's just about the knife. It's in there, one hand on the handle, the other on his dick. It's like, oh, I'm either going to come or stab someone.
Everybody's got a kink. Right, so, yeah, that's their prime suspect. So if this guy had Gypsy, she was in serious fucking trouble.
Yeah.
On June 15th, 2000... Well,
at least she'd have 9 hours.
She'd have 9 hours. Just get him a Big Mac and she saw it.
Yeah, 9 hours of being safe because he's going to be preoccupied.
Distraction. On June 15th, 2015, a team of armed officers descended on Goda John's house. Their suspect quickly surrendering to their custody. It was like full armoured police and everything. He must have absolutely bricked it.
Oh, yeah.
He wasn't alone, though. Gypsy was also there in his house, unharmed and seemingly well, despite having been without her wheelchair, oxygen and medication.
Mm-hmm.
Word quickly reached back to Missouri that Gypsy had been found safe and relief flooded the community. It was a miracle that the fragile little girl had been found. They did not understand what had happened. All that mattered to them at that point was that she was safe. But not long after, rumours began to fly. A man called Nicholas Godajohn had been arrested and charged with murder in the first degree, but so had Gypsy. How could that be possible? It was unfathomable to the community. She was a paralysed cancer patient, her mother's whole world and best friend. She was a dying child. On the 16th of June, the Greene County Sheriff's Office held a press conference on the case, telling the media, things are not always as they appear.
Yeah.
Too fucking true.
A little bit.
And on the 17th of June, 2015, at a televised arraignment hearing in Wisconsin to be charged with her mother's murder, Kim, Aaliyah and her father, Rod, all wept as they watched Gypsy Rose Blanchard walk into the courtroom to be charged on her own 2 feet. And that is where we stop for this week.
See, well, first sort of been crying because like, oh God, this is going to be charged for murder. And then they see her walking like, what?
Her father actually said he had no idea who she could walk until he saw her on the screen. At the press conference, they did say that she could walk, she didn't need her wheelchair, but Rod hadn't seen that.
Mm.
And the first he knew that she could walk was when he saw her in court. And apparently he cried because he was so relieved that he could walk.
Yeah.
My heart breaks for him, it really does.
We would have been crying as well. It would have been bloody, well, the two of them had been deprived, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's obviously been made to think she's disabled. And he would probably be feeling that he's failed her because he wasn't there to do the right thing, which is kind of...
Through no fault of his own, yeah. And that's something that we will get into next week.
No fault of his own. He's tried to do the right thing from the start.
He has.
She told these stories saying about how he wasn't paying any child support and stuff, but he still was.
Yeah.
So what was she doing with the money?
Gypsy, when she was arrested, she thought she was 19, and this is something that, again, we'll get into next week, but she was actually 23 years old, and Rod had continued paying child support after she turned 18 because he wanted to make sure that all her medical expenses were covered.
Yeah, because he's trying to...
He's a really good guy. Yeah. He's a really good guy. Next week, we'll go into how Dee Dee got away with things as long as she did, where people miss the signs of what was going on. We'll take a look at Munchausen's in a little bit more detail. And then obviously we'll have a look at Gypsy's side of things with Nicholas Godejohn and how they reached the point where they decided that their best course of action was to murder somebody. Because let's not forget, while we sit here in judgment of Dee Dee, she's not here anymore to tell her side of the story.
No.
And whatever way you look at it, she's a murder victim.
Yeah.
It's not for us to decide who deserves to live and who deserves to die. So, have you got something a little bit less dire to finish the episode on? I've got some
questions. So, there was the...
You've got so many questions.
Well, the... You said there was the her friend. That
yeah,
was like
Leah.
Yeah. What else did she do exactly?
What do you mean?
Like, because she was mentioned a few times. Would she go around and spend time with her and stuff or what?
We'll go into that more next week.
But okay.
Gypsy had access to the internet and had set up secret Facebook accounts.
Right. No, just thinking like the characters in this story.
Yeah. Gypsy had set up secret Facebook accounts basically to communicate with the outside world.
Right. Including her friend.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because the thing about...
I was just wondering where the connection came from. Because it's not like she can pop out in her wheelchair.
No, because Mum was with her at all times.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll go into Gypsy's side of things in detail next week.
Right.
But, yeah, she found ways to get to the outside world. And the thing is that Gypsy tells people that at first she genuinely believed that she was ill.
Mm.
And then over time, as she grew up and grew older, she started to clock that something wasn't right.
You got the symptoms.
And also, you know, it's your mum. They tell you something, you believe it.
Well.
If you guys have got questions or comments or just generally want to have a natter, you can find us on Facebook at Deviant, a True Crime Podcast, Twitter at Deviant Crime Pod, or on Instagram at Deviant Crime Podcast.
I want to say, if you're familiar with the case and you know some things that a lot of people might overlook, maybe send it our way.
Yes.
Just in case it's not come up in the research.
You can also email us at deviantcrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you find the episode interesting, entertaining, etc., etc., please rate, review, and subscribe. You can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. And we will continue the story of Gypsy Rae Blanchard, Nicholas Godejohn, and Dee Dee Blanchard in our episode next week. We're going to try and get into a regular upload schedule now that we've got a bit more to grips with our technical side of things. So we're looking that moving forwards, our episodes will be uploaded every Wednesday.
And also share with your friends, because we're a new podcast. This is episode,
we're so new!
This is episode 2, and you know, it's... The more exposure we get, the more feedback we get, the better kind of show we can put on as well.
We just want to make friends.
Yeah, that too, yeah.
Do you have something less depressing to tell us about in the world of Derpy Criminals this week?
Derpy Criminals?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've thought of a new name for it.
What are you going to call it?
Criminally Stupid.
I approve. Okay. Criminally Stupid section.
Criminally Stupid. So, November 21st, 2017, man breaks into a house in Glasgow.
Yay!
Well, near Glasgow. And he was a little bit pickled at the time. You've heard of stories where someone's left a driver's license, or their trousers, or their car keys. Some dumb shit like that, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so, can you imagine your surprise if it's a Monday, 11:50 p.m, something's been left behind in your house, the hints that a burglary's happened?
Okay.
It happens to be a drunk man who is on your sofa covered in Doritos and half a pie.
Sounds like a good night out.
Yeah. The Monklands police tweeted, "Sleeping on the job. We all feel tired when we start a shift, and a thief who started his shift at 23:45 yesterday was no different. He broke into a house on Corswell Street, decided on a pit stop, ate half a pie and fell asleep covered in Doritos. He woke up in cuffs." Hashtag finger looking good.
Oh, bless him.
Yeah, he's a 46-year-old as well.
Too much of that backfast if he's in Glasgow. It's a tonic.
Not the first time this has ever happened before. A few years ago, a Texan man called Kevin Connolly, he found a burglar asleep in his guest room in Houston, called the police. Same in Florida. Sarasota County Sheriff's Office was called after a cleaning lady found a man sleeping on a bed next to a bag full of jewellery he intended to steal.
Oh, my God. Guys, come on.
Yeah. So a bit of a shorter one today, but your house has been broken into. What would you rather find? A man sleeping on the bed next to a bag of jewels, or a man sleeping on the sofa covered in Doritos and half pie?
I think I'd take the pie, man.
Yeah?
I think I'd take the pie, man. He's probably had a bit too much to drink, and I think I could probably take him. That really is just, like, half-arsing it, isn't it?
Yeah. There was a fault. It was like, you know what? I'm going to buy a grotty house.
Why is he Northern? It's Scotland.
In a minute. Scotland's North.
Oh, not
everyone in Scotland has a Scottish accent, okay? So, yeah, that's today's, or this week's, Criminally Stupid.
A bit more of a harmless deviant.
Yeah. His deviance was breaking an entry in Glutton.
Well, thanks for listening, guys. Remember, come find us on the socials, and we'll speak to you next week when we will complete the case of Gypsy Rose Blanchard. Until then, bye!
Bye!